You know, Tori, I think I said this while we were watching the game, but it's really interesting to be on the other side of one of those heartbreakers when you could hear every one of those 60,000 hearts just being broken up there in Ames. It's usually we're on the other side of that, getting snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. But this time, we've turned the tables on them.
Yeah, how do they like it? I loved it, just watching their faces, and then watching James Daniels jump into the crowd and just in stunned silence around him, except for like the half a dozen Hawkeye fans patting him on the back. It was a glorious, glorious thing, and it didn't look like it was going to happen. So, but here we are on a post-hate week, 12 Saturdays. Tori Brecht here with James Bladel and Bill Delahant. And Bill, you were watching in Omaha. I think we got a pretty interesting text from you after the Cyclones went up by double digits. Lost a little faith there, buddy. How'd you come through the whole thing?
I got over it pretty quick.
Let's not pick on Bill. I mean, we all kind of, I think, lost a lot of faith. I do remember asking the
Hey, I'm the
bartender.
one that texted fire Brian Ferentz at one point after those three series. So no, I'm not picking on anybody. I was there too.
I remember when the bartender asked us if we want another round, and I said, "Yeah, you got any drain cleaner back there? You could just put it over the rocks, or just mix it with a Diet Coke."
I think my one prediction from last week that I would call for Kirk Ferentz to be fired has absolutely came true. And my second part of that was that I would want him to have a 20-year contract added, and I again want that now. So, yep, my prediction came true.
Well, at least
And
you're consistently on an even keel there, man. That's why we like you.
live and die with every play.
Bipolar Bill to the rescue as usual.
There you go.
Well, I mean, I think sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and sometimes you kind of just escape town and don't look back, right? And it certainly felt like that was the case. Well, what did you see? Okay, I think a lot has been made, and just for the record, we're recording this on Monday, and certainly a lot has been made about the performance of Nate Stanley. We could do a breakdown of like some of the positives. Let's maybe go around with one of the positives, and then we can talk about what your concerns are going forward. So, Tori, what's your plus takeaway for the team this last week?
I think my biggest takeaway, as far as positives are concerned, is his absolute ability to remain calm, cool, and collected when things are either going well or going terribly. I mean, I get the sense that he's just a really, really cool cat. And I've read that in some of the media accounts about him as well. You know, that he just doesn't seem to get rattled, and he's going to keep taking shots no matter what. A little bit of the old Ricky Stanzi in him, even more than Bethard to me. I really, really excited to see that kind of level of calm, cool, collected. I can't remember if it was Morehouse or which writer was writing about it, but and let's not get too ahead of ourselves, but said that was one thing that Joe Montana was known for. Like, I guess that one of the big Super Bowl drives that he had at one point when they were down and they had the ball at like their own 10-yard line, he turned to one of his teammates and said, "Hey, is that John Candy up in the stands?" And then they knew they were going to get a touchdown. And I guess, and he made the point that that's kind of the same deal that you're seeing with Nate Stanley, that he's just not going to let a moment become too big for him. And boy, did that was that ever in evidence in that fourth quarter, the late in the fourth quarter, and in overtime. A lot to look forward to.
Definitely, definitely. The more I've kind of reflected on the game, I've just been thinking, you know, we've got a quarterback. And with Ricky Stanzi, he kind of came on slowly. I don't think there was a moment in that 2008 season. It was just kind of, you know, he's better than the alternative, and I won't name names there. But this kind of reminds me of Drew Tate in that loss to Michigan in 2004 when you know, he gets his helmet ripped off and he's just standing there looking for a receiver. This was kind of that game for him. Just big stage, ice water in his veins. Yeah, I'm so stoked to see where his career goes.
That Drew Tate play remains my all-time number one Iowa play that didn't count.
Yeah, that's so memorable. I gotta give credit to our receiving core. You know, Stanley had a great day, but he was spreading the ball around quite a bit. I mean, both the tight ends got into the game, you know, easily, and Vandenberg and Smith-Marset had touchdowns, and they just... they're getting open. They're getting separation. They're, you know, they're baiting the coverage. You know, they're feinting in, and then they're going out, and then they're getting the guys to bite on those double moves. And it's just, for me, it's like Iowa finally has not just a competent, but actually an above average receiving core, and they're fast. They're really fast. And I mean, when Matt Vandenberg is out there, and granted, you know, he's had some foot problems, but when Matt Vandenberg is probably like the second or third fastest guy on the field, you know you've had a serious speed upgrade. So considering what it was like last year and considering what I saw in the spring game, I think I'm really pleased with the receiving core.
Well, you know, Jim, I'm not one to badmouth coaches. They have tough jobs. I think for the most part they work hard. But it's really hard not to see these wide receivers, to your point, running open and not view that as an indictment of the Greg Davis offense, because, you know, all off season we talked about what inexperienced and potentially even poor wide receiving core we are going to have. Now all of a sudden they're getting open, and even when Stanley's not hitting them, they're still getting open. I remember after every single game last year we complained about the receivers not getting open. So you got to think that some of that has to be scheme, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Every pass in the Greg Davis era had to be thrown into a tiny shoebox. And yeah, I absolutely agree. Our guys were running free in their secondary, and that's going to come to Stanley. He's going to start making those passes.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, far be it for me to puke and defend Greg Davis's schemes, but I will point out that two of the three guys I mentioned weren't here last year. So just Vandenberg, right? The other guys, I think, were additions, and definitely it was a major upgrade in what we saw at that receiving core. So
good point, but I will note that Riley McCarron made a NFL practice squad, so apparently he can get open against NFL DBs, but not ones in college.
Well, that's because NFL guys don't play behind the line of scrimmage.
That's pretty good. Bill, you I think you said you had some stats to lay on us about the emerging Nate Stanley. Do we want to maybe make this our impromptu Encyclopedia Bill segment, or you got more stats of all types for us this week?
I've got a jumbo package of stats for you this week in the Encyclopedia Bill section.
And now, Encyclopedia Bill. Schwing!
Yeah, Stanley in his 333-yard effort, 5 touchdowns on Saturday. No Hawkeye quarterback has thrown for over 300, hit 5 touchdowns with no INT since Chuck Hartley in 1987 against Northwestern. And yeah, Stanley looked Hartley-esque. Let's not judge him on one game, but looking pretty great there. In the rest of my stats, Kirk is now 10-9 all time against Iowa State. You know, that's a winning record. He's won 4 of his last 5, and 10-5 over the last 15 meetings since his first win in 2003. So we're definitely on the up and up there. That's good. Hayden Fry-esque territory.
So I heard an interesting stat. I think it was on Twitter that through 2 games, Nate Stanley has more TD passes than James Vandenberg had in 2012, the entire season. Is that correct?
Ouch.
8 versus 7.
I would not doubt it. That 2012 offense was pathetic. And I think it was convincing those receivers, you know, to actually run behind the chains on third down. That was, they had to break that bit of counterintuitivity there. Thanks, Booze.
Well, here's a stat that'll warm our hearts since that one was depressing. But there's a very good chance in my mind that Iowa should have a great shot at beating Iowa State again next year. You know, they will not have this quarterback who looked pretty good. They will not have the great Alan Lazard. Oh, my God.
I thought Park was a junior, Tori.
Is he?
I think we got one more year of him and Montgomery, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll be at home. We'll be at Kinnick, and we'll still have Nate Stanley. Yeah. So I think there's a fairly good shot that we'll be able to take him down next year, which will be the first senior class to defeat Iowa State all four of their years since 1997.
Damn.
Unreal. Yeah, Tim Dwight and Tavian Banks' class, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
They were okay. To your point, Tori, about, you know, not having to worry about Iowa State, watching the last play of the game where Stanley hits Smith-Marset, the first guy over there to congratulate him is true sophomore Noah Fant, congratulating true freshman Smith-Marset, and then true sophomore Nate Stanley jumps in the picture. I mean, there's kind of a youth movement in Iowa City that could be pretty dang good.
Beastly.
Well, guys, let's see. Let's revisit our predictions here, because I think we've got a bit of a controversy on who won the points for the Gnome of Gnolledge this week. And Bill,
how
am I
the Gnome
am I,
of Gnolledge doing?
Yeah, I heard you broke it.
He's gone missing. My dad is moving house, and this damn Christmas themed Iowa Hawkeye gnome has been sitting on our dining room table for months. And every time I go over there, hey, you can have this. This is yours. And then as soon as I go over there, hey, I actually need this thing. It's gone. He's skipped town on us. But I've got another gnome, little gnome dressed in blue, that's perfectly good.
It's a Hawkeye gnome.
I'm calling bullshit, Bill. Yeah. How come the gnome magically gets lost the week when you finally don't win the picks? I'm calling bullshit. I think you're hiding the gnome.
Well, if he's not a Hawkeye gnome. Well, first of all, if he's not a Hawkeye gnome, then he's not the Gnome of Knowledge. Okay.
He looks pretty knowledgeable.
He just does
knowledge.
Like that.
Knowledge, remember?
He just does a commercial, whatever that is, whatever that Travelocity commercial or whatever that thing was. But the other part of it is, if your dad's anything like, you know, when I moved, is I've got boxes that I haven't unwrapped since the first time I moved in 1997. So you could be decades before we see the Gnome of Gnolledge again. I think we need to come up with a replacement, guys.
So what you're saying, Jim, is that you're the reason Iowa hasn't won four in a row against Iowa State, because you have boxes you haven't unpacked since the Tavian Banks and Tim Dwight senior year. Thanks, Bladel.
If you've got a box, a moving box that's taped up that you haven't opened in that long, I say just put it in the dumpster. You know, unless it's got grandma's ashes in it, really, what's the worst thing you're going to miss?
All right, so who won this week anyway? I know I didn't, because I had something like 27-17, and I think I had Manny Rigamba, who got benched as my
You had Gervais.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, okay.
So, Tori, you're going to have to settle this one. I think Bill and I both can make a legit claim to having won this week, so we're going to ask you to make the decision, because my case is that I picked a high-scoring game, 35-20, and my pick-to-click was Wadley and Butler. Okay, so I got that, I think, the pick-to-click, you know. Bill, on the other hand, picked a lower-scoring game, 27-24, which is the exact margin of victory. But, as you mentioned, he picked Manny Bagumba, who didn't even finish the game. So, you know, it's like, what are we going by? Score or tenure of score, margin of victory, or pick-to-click? I mean, I think you can make a solid argument either way. I will say that Bill won week one. That's your first fact. And then the second one is I've been your friend longer. That's your second one.
I'm going to say that Jim predicted a higher scoring game that I just didn't see happening. But he predicted a comfortable win, whereas I knew that it was going to be a struggle to the very end. And he can't say the same.
But Your Honor, I did... I did pick a shootout. It's just, yeah.
Okay, well, you guys both make some excellent points. I mean, for one thing, seeing a shootout coming in this game and, you know, but is great. But picking Wadley as your pick-to-click is, let's be honest, kind of the coward's way out, because he's clearly the best player on the field at any given time.
At least he was still playing when time expired. He wasn't riding the plane.
But Bill nailed the exact... margin of victory, which is huge. But man, that Manny Rigumba thing is almost unforgivable. So I think I'm going to have to go with a King Solomon thing here. And Bill, I'm afraid you're going to have to cut that damn gnome in half, especially if it's not the Hawkeye one.
Bad news for him. I don't mind.
It's probably already broken. Splitting. If you used, you know, if you used the U-Haul guys, it's probably already broken anyway, right?
That's my ruling. Cut him in half.
All right. Well, we'll give us a tie, and unlike we'll go Hayden Fry era and just say that we tied, and there's no sudden death overtime. So we'll toast it. But hey, anytime you can, you know, just imagine how much sour that conversation would have been if we hadn't pulled it out. So let's toast this one and move on to our guest. I'm pretty excited about this.
Well, we have a great guest this week. It's the news director of WQAD and a colleague of mine here in the Quad Cities, Matt Randazzo. Some of you may know him as Daz Hawk on Hawkeye Report. Matt, welcome into the 12 Saturdays podcast.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. A good time to come on to talk Iowa football, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I don't know if you knew this, Matt, but had Iowa actually lost that game, which was looking pretty dire there for a while, Johnny Gingrich was going to have to be on the podcast as an Iowa State fan. I told her she could rip on us and the Hawkeyes as much as she wants. So we're glad to have you.
Yeah, no, she said that. Johnny's much prettier than I am, but I think you'll enjoy my conversation tonight a little bit better than what you would have if Johnny was on here. So
we'll definitely survive it better. The question I have for you, Matt, is this team kind of feels like they're starting to get a little bit of an identity, a feel. You know, I know you get to talk to some of these guys. You kind of get a sense. Can you give me kind of a feeling on what the kind of the esprit de corps or what kind of a team we might be looking at this year? Might they have that it that we sometimes look for?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that it factor seems to be the question, because sometimes these teams have it, sometimes they don't. I think that they do, and you see why with the way they responded a couple times in Ames on Saturday. I mean, these guys could have folded, they could have gone away. They didn't. They continue to battle. What I really get from the guys, and when I talk to them on a Tuesday, we usually do our press conferences on Tuesday. We get the players around 11 o'clock. And especially last week, everybody's really confident in what Nate Stanley brings to the table. And he's a quiet guy. I know everybody's talked about that. And he's really a quiet to himself type of guy, especially with the media. But he's got that air of confidence about himself. And I think you get that in the huddle with him. And that's a big thing moving forward, because he didn't have to talk to us. He doesn't have to be a rah-rah guy and run up the field and go crazy every time something good happens. He's got to have the command and respect of that huddle. And he just turned 20 10 days ago. And I think he has that right now. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why he won the job. And moving forward, that could be your kind of it factor with these guys. It's a whole new ballgame. This team's biggest question coming into the season was, would they have a good starting quarterback? Or what would that quarterback be? Would it be Nate Stanley? Would it be Uyghurs? If you answer that question now and can continue to get better moving forward, the rest of it kind of falls into place, doesn't it? With the defense and the offensive line, the running games, tight ends. There's a lot of questions answered. That was the biggest one, I think, coming into the season.
Yeah, it's really great, Matt. And I think we all watched Stanley take some huge steps. I mean, he went from question mark to what are the comparisons? Chuck Hartlieb, that everybody's saying, which is a pretty big jump from between week one and week two. You know, my question was another coming out party really was for Brian Ferentz. I've never seen a game, and even some of the folks on the Iowa State message boards were complimenting just how well that game was called. And I think that winning play, the winning pass there in overtime was out of a running formation. And just, he's really busting up tendencies. And I don't know, one of the things Tori and I used to complain about previously was, you know, if we can call the plays and scout the team from the stands, you know, the opponents can do it. I mean, what are you seeing with Brian and coming into his role now 2 weeks in?
Well, first off, I can't imagine Tori complaining, which is just, I mean, mind-boggling to me. But I think you're absolutely right. And going into the season, people wanted to see a new offense. And I think game one, people might have been a little frustrated, because you're not going to get a new offense. You're not going to all of a sudden run a spread or do all these crazy things. That's not Iowa football, and that's not what he's going to do. I think what's redefining this offense is doing different things. When everyone thinks you're going to zig, Brian Ferentz is going to zag. You know, he's going to do different things. And you're exactly right. There's a you look at that last play call, and they got the ball first and goal at the 5, maybe, or was it the 8, whatever it was. And any other year, Iowa has 4 chances to run the ball into the end zone, don't you think? And that's right. Not what they were going to do, and they weren't going to be complacent and try to continue to pound the ball in the end zone. They took what was given to them, and that's a great sign. One thing that really stands out to me is Sunday night I did a charity event with Julian Vanderbilt here in the Quad Cities, and the first thing he says to me with a big smile on his face, he goes, "We went deep 6 times. We took a shot 6 different times. That's not in a season. That's in one game. And we missed 3 of them that I know fans go crazy about. But we took 6 shots downfield. That didn't happen a lot under previous regimes. Brian Ferentz is going to do really good things. And you're exactly right. Nate Stanley, offensive player of the week in the Big Ten, co-offensive player of the week in the Big Ten. But the Brian Ferentz train is a rolling. And people are jumping on board with what he's doing with that offense.
And one of the things that I think I noticed was a little different level of intensity. And I think some of that's attributed to Brian Ferentz, too. I told this anecdote in one of my columns last year, but at the Illinois game, I was sitting right by the bench. And he got on them after they, if you remember, they had a real slow start. And he's yelling, you know, "Did we effing come here? Oh, what's wrong? Do you guys feel effing cold? Are we just going to lay down here?" And
sure.
I get that. And I get a sense that there's... And I think that's going to help, especially in this Iowa State rivalry going forward, too. Have you sensed maybe a little bit more of an edge or intensity with the kind of some of the young blood in the coaching staff?
I think you're good. I like your great analogy, and you're exactly right. He brings that to it. That's one reason why I'm surprised that he's upstairs calling plays, because you're exactly right with his demeanor on the sidelines and the way he likes to get with players, get into players, motivate players, that kind of stuff. But he's upstairs calling plays, which I think, I mean, it's working. Don't change a thing. But I was surprised by that decision just because of the personality that he is. He brings that swagger to this team that it doesn't normally have. This, he's a Ferentz. And so things aren't going to change crazy, but he is, I don't want to say good Ferentz, bad Ferentz, but he is the things that fans want Kirk Ferentz to be. Brian Ferentz is going to do that. He's going to push the issue with different things. And I think what you're seeing is Kirk Ferentz allowing him to do some of the things that Kirk's not comfortable doing, and he's going to go ahead and do that. A good example is the shots and the digs he took during the offseason at Matt Campbell and Iowa State for offering all those things. Coach Ferentz isn't going to do that. Kirk's not going to do that. But Brian brings that. He pushes the envelope. He has a much bigger personality than Kirk Ferentz does. And I think fans like that. And you know what? You know young kids today. You know 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. They like that too. And so I think you're right. He may relate to some of the younger kids a little bit better. Not saying that Kirk Ferentz doesn't and people don't love Coach Ferentz, Kirk that is, but he has that different demeanor about him that I think younger people like.
Hey, Matt, this is Bill Delahan here. Switching gears to the other side of the ball, I don't think anybody saw that defensive performance coming up. Is that maybe an indication that Iowa State's just that good, or are we going to see a little bit of reshuffling on that side of the ball? I know that Manny Rugumba came in, started, didn't play down a stretch when we were in our 4-3 base. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think Manny Rugumba got benched. I mean, I think that's – we had Gary Dolphin in the Quad Cities this morning for a grid club, and he kind of talked about just wasn't himself, wasn't playing well. You're coming off a suspension from week one. I don't think that's a – you're already kind of in the doghouse a little bit. You don't play well, so he took a seat. I think that's hopefully meant to send a message to that young man. I'm sure it's going to, and he's a very talented young man, so I think he's important to the secondary. When you look at this defense, and it's just kind of the way things are with Iowa football, spread offenses give them fits and give Iowa State credit. Their offense is pretty good. Jake Park is a fantastic talent. Those big wide receivers and Lazard and all those guys, they're going to be, I think that's one thing I came away from this game realizing is that Iowa State is about ready to take a step forward. They have a lot, that running back is fantastic. So I think, yeah, you give credit to Iowa State because they're a much better team than I think Iowa fans gave them credit for coming in, but spread offenses, Penn State, Ohio State, that type of thing coming up, that's when Iowa tends to struggle. If you look at going to Wisconsin, going to Michigan State, even Lincoln a little bit, when teams want to pound the football and play the way Iowa wants to play, Iowa's usually pretty good. It's when they get spread out like that that it tends to cause problems. Now, here's the good thing. Iowa is going to have an offense now, hopefully, that can kind of compete. And if you're going to get into a shootout with somebody, that's what you can kind of go about. I wouldn't worry too much about this defense because it's still a really good defense. It's just that type of offense has always seemed to give Iowa trouble, something they're going to need to have to figure out. Even Michigan, to an extent, doesn't really do the spread out offense that Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State do. So, I think that's the kind of thing that you kind of worry about moving forward, some of the bigger teams, but they're not going to change much. This is really a good defense. Here's the problem. They didn't get any pressure in the front four. And in this offense, you need, going into the season, they wanted to cause pressure without having to use the Raider package, without having to do that kind of stuff. They thought that front four is good enough to kind of create that. And they really didn't do that for much of the day in Ames. That, I think, is going to have to change moving forward.
Yeah.
At least when they didn't have Epiniza in, right?
Yeah. That's a bad kid, isn't he? That's a very good young football player. I'll tell you what right now. And I think everybody sees it. We don't have to sit on a podcast and try to be experts. That young man is going to be fun to watch for 2-3 years. I don't know if we're going to get him all four, but a really good football player.
Yeah, I was actually texting with these guys and using some colorful language that it seemed like we only got pressure when he was in, but I don't want to take Parker Hesse out because, I mean, the guy's got a huge INT, tackles for loss. I think he had 7 solo.
Sure.
What do you think we see down a stretch the staff trying to work that out, trying to get Epinesa on the field with the rest of those starters, or how does that work out?
Absolutely. And I think it's one of those things where they are being cautious with a freshman, as you're always going to be. But they're realizing that this isn't a freshman, your normal freshman. This guy was rated by some recruiting services as the best defensive end coming out last year. I mean, he's as good as you're going to get, and you're going to need to find a spot for him on the field. A good buddy of mine, Tom Cakert, always before the season said, you know, he's going to start midway through the season. And then he kind of retracted a little bit and said, I don't know if he'll start because you know how Coach Ferentz is. He'll play starter snaps by halfway through the season. And you look at it, I think he's got a couple sacks already. He's got a couple tackles for losses. He causes havoc back there. And he's so young, he's just getting better and better. He's a big kid, but he's going to get bigger. He's going to get better throughout the year. And I think it's somebody you have to find a way to put him on the field, especially on third down, moving with those tight end or those defensive ends, one of them inside, and kind of having four different guys that can get after the passer on third and longs. I think you're going to see a lot more of AJ Epinesa throughout the season.
The question I had for you, Matt, is obviously, and I want to bring one back to the Quad Cities here a little bit because, you know, that's what we cover here at WQAD. So I wanted to ask you about the Gervais kid from Davenport Assumption. Look, lights out in the spring game, lights out in practice, lights out against Wyoming. Had a couple little jitteries there, I think, against Iowa State, particularly that long touchdown pass to that Hakeem kid. Tell me a little bit about him. I'm sure you've interviewed him. What's his makeup like? And do you think this is going to put him sideways at all, or will he move forward?
Yeah, I think he's got a great head on his shoulders. He's a fantastic young man. He was a quarterback in high school and a really good one at Assumption. Really good defensive back as well. Good safety. Great head on his shoulders. He'll be fine. He'll move forward. He made some bad plays. And it wasn't anything that he did wrong. X's and O's and up in his head. Fell, slipped one time. Obviously, that cost Iowa an 80-yard touchdown, something you don't want to see. But, yeah, he'll bounce back nicely. Joe Conklin, a good buddy of mine, used to play at Iowa. He's the athletic director at Olivet High School here in the Quad Cities. He kind of talks about the makeup around him and stuff like that. And he's one of those guys that comes from the mold of a Brett Greenwood. And I know that's a guy near and dear to my heart here in the Quad Cities, and, I mean, all Iowa fans as well. But he's got that kind of makeup where he's just a tough-nosed, tough kid. He's going to continue to get better. He's athletic as all get out, and he's just that next line of safeties that weren't supposed to be really good when he went to Iowa, earned his way to a scholarship, and I love him. I think the future is really bright for him, and Pat Anger will talk to me all the time and tell me that the reason why that defense was good back in 2008 was because of Brett Greenwood and what he did and what he knew, and he told people where to go. Now, mind you, there was probably 2 or 3 NFL defensive linemen on that team as well, but that guy in the backfield and Brett Greenwood kind of did everything. And talking with Joe a little bit and talking with Jake Gervais a little bit, he seems like that type of guy where he knows what he's doing, and he's going to be somebody who's a sophomore right now. It was funny because when Brett Greenwood played at Iowa, Brett was there and he got on the field, and everyone kind of expected that next person to come in and take over for him. And what you had in the end was an all Big Ten player his senior season. I think that's what you're going to get for Jake Gervais. I kind of really see him following that same path, which is exciting for Hawkeye fans and exciting for people here in the Quad Cities, because we've been blessed to have some good Hawkeyes on the field and some good people as well. And he's just that next in line of a Brett Greenwood, Pat Anger, Julian Vandervelde, those type of people that do it right both on and off the field. So, yeah, Quad Cities is pretty proud of that young man. That's for sure.
Well, and what, and to your point, Matt, that, you know, the there was plenty of criticism of Greenwood his first couple seasons and mm-hmm. a fair amount of grumbling. But boy, did he really put the team on his shoulders in a few games, especially his senior year. And then, of course, afterwards, such an inspiration with all he's been through and what he's accomplished since then.
Yeah, and he's doing, and people who are wondering about Brett Greenwood, I get to sneak over, not nearly as much as I'd like to, but he, Pat and Joe work out with Matt Roakes and do rehab with Brett every Wednesday they go. I think every Friday they go too. And I've been able to bless just to go and go to a couple Wednesday therapies. It's been a few months since I've been there, but talk to those guys all the time about how good he's doing. And he continues to get better and better every day. And it's just a cool environment because it's teammates getting each other better, you know, and it's Joe Conklin and Pat Anger and Brett, and they continue to joke and laugh and do the same things, and they motivate Brett to get better, and Brett motivates them to be better people. And so it's a really cool situation. You're right. I think, was it Nico Law? Was that the safety that was going to come in and replace Brett Greenwood because he was the young guy everybody was excited about? I may be completely wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, and you look at Brett's senior year, you had huge interception against Illinois to seal the deal. Big play after big play from that young man. And he, like I said, was the brains in that offense. And you could talk to anybody on that defense, brains of that defense, I should say. Talk to anybody on that defense, and they're going to tell you the exact same thing. So
yeah, and it's good company and to be compared to somebody like that for Gervais.
Absolutely.
And I'll always remember how Greenwood just sealed that win against Michigan in 09 when he picked off Denard Robinson, I think it was. To end that game. So that was fantastic. So, hey, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us. Boy, it's a great week to put behind us. I mean, anytime you can go into Ames and steal away with a win, but that one in particular felt particularly satisfying. So, Matt, you're on the Hawkeye Report podcast with our friend Tom Caker. That's correct?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We do, which I do one once a week. And a lot of fun to do it. We started it last year. Pat Anger hops in and hops out. He did them all last 3 years with us. And
awesome.
We try to get Joe Conklin in and Julian Vandervelde, Mitch King, and those people alike. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to talk Hawks. Anytime you guys need somebody to talk Hawks, let me know. It's an honor to be on with you guys. And what do you guys think with the Cy-Hawk series? It continues every year, or do you want it to go to every 2 years?
Oh.
After what we just watched, like, it's hard to say you don't want it to happen every year, right?
If Iowa State can maintain that level of competitiveness, then, you know, then okay. But, I mean, but right now, like, look, we were joking around a little bit. You know, we win the game and we somehow lose votes in the coaches' poll. So, I mean, this is how it's wired against us. But if they can continue to make some noise in the Big 12, get out there, get some bowls, win some bowls, then, yeah, let's keep it going. Let them take that next step.
I'll tell you this before I go. Julian Vandervelde is the guy that we can't talk to freshmen at Iowa. It's the Julian Vandervelde rule. When he was a freshman, somebody asked him what he thought of Iowa State, and he flat out said, "I hate Iowa State." And
of course, you know, entity that is Iowa State.
And you know us media, we're going to run with that. That's going to be the headline in every paper and every TV station, all that stuff. So since then, nope. And Julian jokes that he'd think by now that Kirk would ease up a little bit, but he hasn't. But even Julian last week on our podcast said that he wouldn't mind seeing this series go to every 2 years. And so when you go to Iowa or Iowa State, you're going to play Iowa or Iowa State, you know, probably once at home and once away. And that shocked me because of his mind thought and his process on this rivalry and the hatred that he has and all that kind of stuff. But him to say that, I'm like, maybe that's the case. Maybe I should be with him. But man, that was fun on Saturday.
But I think that's perfect, though, to go to every 2 years because, I mean, look at what Wisconsin's doing with these awesome games, like playing at camp, playing up at Lambeau Field, playing against Notre Dame. I mean, that's what I miss, especially now that we're in this nine-game Big Ten season. I want to see us play a Missouri or, you know, maybe even an SEC team once in a while, and you just cannot do that. Barta will never do that. The coffers at Iowa can't afford to do that with this home and away. So,
but, Tori, the trade-off, as we discussed last episode, the trade-off is that if you lose that game and you've got 3 years now, now until you get another chance. You know, it's not bragging rights for 364 days. Now you're talking about bragging rights. Your next shot is 2019. I mean, that's something that's going to be a tough thing to swallow.
Yeah, but if I'm going to go see Iowa play Notre Dame at Soldier Field the next season, somehow I'll get over it.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. You know, I thought myself, I agreed with Julian. I'm like, it makes sense to me. All I'm going to say is that was really fun. Unfortunately, that's not always the way it is in this rivalry. If you had that game for me every year, sign me up. I'm watching. And I don't, as an Iowa fan, I don't mind 42-3 last year. But like, that's not the way it always is. And unfortunately, 42-3 was great for everyone in Iowa, but that wasn't great for the rest of the nation and what people think of Iowa after that game. So
exactly.
I don't know. Like you said, if you can sign me up for that game all the time and it's competitive and if they go to some bowl games every year, if not every 2 years, would be great for me. But boys, I got to let you go. Thank you so much for letting me join you guys tonight. I appreciate it.
Right on. Thanks, Daz.
All right, guys. Be good.
Well, it's always good to talk to Matt. I really hope we can get him on in the podcast later on in the year, Tori. I can see why you work with such amazing people and rabid Hawkeye fans. You know, but one thing that struck me is we talked to Matt. We did the earlier segment of the podcast, but we really didn't spend a lot of quality time talking about Akram Wadley, who arguably put the game on his back, you know, on that last drive and tied it up when it was under under 3 minutes to play. So, you said I was kind of cowardly for picking him to click, but I mean, come on. I mean, he was just doing those kinds of things that you expect to see from, you know, players that have that unnatural and rare talent.
Yeah, he had a hell of a game. Actually, I was looking this up. He needs 3 more yards, which he'll probably get on his first carry against North Texas, to crack 2,000 yards for his career.
Wow.
Also, he moved into 15th all-time on the career rushing yards list. He passed Levi Mitchell, who was Iowa's running back from 69 to 71.
Don't know that guy.
He's all right. He's 9 yards behind Marcus Coker.
Know that guy.
You know that guy. And I was just kind of thinking, and being very conservative here, if he gets 900 more yards this season, which I think is totally doable with the next 10 or 11 games, he will move into the top 5. He'll surpass Fred Russell, so your top 5 rushers would be Shaw, Betts, Young, Tavian Banks, and Akram Wadley. Not bad company at all.
Wow, he'd be above Green at that point?
Yes, sir.
And
yeah, but remember, Green only really had the one huge season.
Yeah. So Coker just had one season in a bowl game, though, if I remember correctly, right?
You're right, yeah. Yeah, he was our offense in 2011, basically. I mean, yeah. Vandenberg threw for 3,000, but there was no other running back.
Yeah.
I think it's really appropriate that it would be Russell that he'd slip past, because that's probably the running back he most reminds me of in terms of just his shiftiness. Not being the biggest guy, but occasionally able to even run through people like we saw on long reception when he was just not going to be denied getting in that end zone. I see a lot of Freddie Russell in him.
I kind of maybe see a little Tavian Banks in him, actually, which he only needs 980 yards to pass him for number 4 on the all-time charts. I mean, he's just got that jump step that, I mean, no Hawkeye running back that I can remember has had since Tavian.
So I think I see what Tori means, because, you know, if you remember, Fred Russell used to just jump cut and just dance people right out of their shoes. And we haven't seen that really since. I don't know. Albert Young could sort of do that, I think. But, you know, what really blows my mind is how he finishes runs. You know, I mean, he can be going down the sideline, and when he sees the defender has the angle, he doesn't step out of bounds or just kind of let the guy push him out of bounds. He puts his head down and just goes into him. And just kind of says, all right, you got me, but you're going to feel this one, man. And it just, you know, I love the attitude. I love the moxie to do that on every single run. But B, I'm kind of like, you know, hey, man, don't unnecessarily hurt yourself. The boundary line's right there. Just step out.
Well, you can tell he just loves playing football. And that's where he actually reminds me a little bit of a guy on the defensive side that is an all-time great for Iowa, and that's Bob Sanders. You know, and what you're talking about, that was kind of the same. Like, I used to wince, like, Bob, save some, man. Like, you don't have to murder every single guy you hit. But I think they're the kind of guys that just, they love the game so much, and they only know one way to play it, and that's at 100 million%, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Gosh, he's a fun player to watch.
Yeah. So we're heading up into the next week here against North Texas, and I guess we can start to look ahead at what we have coming up. And I think Tori and I both admitted we did not do our homework this week, Bill. North Texas, I mean, you know, I think we know Hayden Fry taught, you know, coach there, and McCarney, we kind of iced his career with some, you know, from with a pretty big snack down in 2015, I believe it was. But other than that, I mean, what's the story? I mean, do they have a pulse this year? Are they still rebuilding from the post McCarney era? Are they anything but a tune up at this point?
They're 1-1. They got beat pretty good by SMU, lost 54-32 in that game. Beat somebody called Lamar a game where they threw for 400 yards.
That's not too hard to do when it's 11-1. I don't even know what this Lamar fella did to piss him off so much.
Wasn't Lamar the guy in Revenge of the Nerds? The one African-American in the fraternity?
Yes,
the one that they made all the homophobic jokes about.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, that movie just could not. It's like Blazing Saddles. Some movies just can't be remade. But yes, I was going to make a joke that, you know, Lamar sounds like one of those, you know, artificial Bible colleges like they create out in the Southeast just for the purposes of having a tax shelter and a football team. But Liberty beat Baylor, so that joke doesn't work anymore.
You know, that's probably exactly what it is, Jim.
But yeah, so I mean, what do they have any playmakers? What's their is it run game, pass game? What sort of offense do they run? Does anybody have any? I mean, I even noticed the announcers even got it wrong. They said that we had to face the Green Wave, and Tori and I looked at each other and said, "That's Tulane, Green Machine. That's North Texas."
Well, it sounds like they'll be able to play the disrespect card. So at least they got that going for them.
I don't know. 2:30 game in Kinnick. The crowd's going to be rowdy. I think we're going to roll them. I'm good because we need to rest guys for Penn State. Sorry, I can't give them any respect. What about you guys?
Yeah, I noticed on Off Tackle Empire they wrote that Iowa had a bye next week, and I was going to argue, and then I'm like, meh. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a bye, but you know. To be a little more serious, I want to see us really work some of the young guys and freshmen then, right? I mean, we know what we got in some of our older guys.
As opposed
guys.
To the first 2 weeks, Tori?
Well, I mean, even more. This will be a game where A.J. Epiniza gets maybe double his workload from the last time. Okay. Maybe we'll get to see Quarles in there a little bit. I'd like to be able to, you know, get some guys some real game experience because, you know, the meat of our order is coming up and right off the bat, you know, I mean, our whether or not we're going to be a major player in the Big Ten could be decided as early as our opener against Penn State.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that hopefully we can get and you know, we can get out early and we can, like you said, just turn this into a bit of a glorified scrimmage where we can get some of the young guys. Even younger guys. I don't know. I think you have to put like a toddler out there to get younger than some of the guys that are scoring for us right now. But I mean, I'd like to see Uyghurs play. You know, I mean, we've seen Stanley. We see what he can do. It's supposedly neck and neck between those two. We might need a backup at some point in the season. So, you know, let's get him some reps and get the rust off of him. I don't think he's ever thrown a pass.
But it's crazy to think that we're always whining about how we never get four-star recruits, and he's our four-star quarterback that's languishing on the bench, right?
Yeah. Bill, what do you want to see this week?
I guess clean some things up, to steal a line from Kirk Ferentz. You know, clean some things up on defense. You know, we'll see if the ball goes where it goes, like it did against Iowa State, because man, to hear our first week podcast where, you know, our guys couldn't miss tackles. We've never seen tackling that well until, and then this week, oh boy, what was that? Was it David Montgomery? Is that the Iowa State running back who just...
He's good.
He's good.
Is he good or is he...
No, he's good.
The rare Cyclone player that catches fire against Iowa and then remembers he plays for Iowa State the week later.
I was reading and I read a lot of Cyclone Fanatic, right? Because one of my favorite things is to hear the wailing of gnashing of teeth and lamentations of our foes. But, you know, there's some and I know they're delusional Cyclone fans, so they get a little over their skis sometimes. But a lot of them are saying that, you know, they haven't seen his like and the way he runs, not just in the Iowa game, but in general, since our good friend Troy Davis.
Yep.
He of the, what did he get, a 4 on his Wunderlich test, I think?
Yeah, that's sort of the first one that popped into my mind was Troy Davis. And yeah, he's just a downhill runner, but he can get guys break tackles. And it's funny because, you know, we got almost to the end of this podcast and certainly through the first segment in the interview without talking too much about the defense. But I got to believe that North Texas is the cure for whatever ails them, right? And if anybody's getting a rest or a break or a week off, it should be the offense. But I think the defense needs maybe a little bit more polishing.
Well, I think, you know, Matt made a good point. Iowa just seems to struggle with that kind of spread attack. And, you know, I don't know what North Texas brings, but I'm certain it's not going to be as good of a spread attack as Iowa State, being a Big 12 team, does. So I don't know. Maybe it'd be nice to practice against a spread offense again, but one maybe with a few less legitimate playmakers. We'll see. But I don't think they could possibly be as bad at tackling as they looked last week. That was troubling, but yeah. I'm going to chalk it off to a one-off in a rivalry game.
And a lot of that, by the way, was your previous week's defensive player of the week, Josie Jewell, missing tackles and making, you know, and looking like he was running in sand. I hope that, you know, it's just that, you know, somebody said about his ankle, and maybe it's just it was tweaked a little sore or something, and it gets back to full strength this week. Or maybe if it's not and it's something a little more serious, they give him a break you know, let him rest up for Penn State, because we really need week one Josie Jewell back.
Definitely. Josie Jewell did have a pick six against North Texas in 2015. So, you know, maybe he can replicate that effort and have a seat on the bench the rest of the day while the backups get some reps.
Well, you know, I can't imagine that their recruiting has been super stellar since that game. So I'm going to presume that this should be kind of a walk in the park. Should we move into the prediction game, my friends? Maybe give old Torby a chance at winning the pieces of the Gnome of Knowledge, the Gnome of Knowledge 2, if you will.
Well, you're 0-2, and I guess I'm 0-1-1, and Bill's 1-0-1. So you can go first, and then I'll pick second, and then we'll let the guy at the top of the standings.
You made me go first last week, and I finished last again.
I'm going to
defer to the second half, and Bill can pick first.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go ahead and say 42-10 Hawks. I think we get up big. Scrubs come in, and it's a run up the middle second half, kind of like Oregon did to Nebraska the day before yesterday. So yeah, 42-10. Yeah, and how about my pick to click? We'll go let's go Amir Smith Marzette again. He came out of nowhere and the cat's out of the bag on him. We're not going to be able to hide him anymore, so let him keep making plays.
All right, so Tori, you want to go now, or you're going to defer all the way to the bottom of the order?
I'll go. That's fine. I'm pissed at myself because I was going to pick Amir Smith Marset as my pick to click.
Oh, you're so original, you guys.
Yeah. All right.
You can do it too.
I'm going 38-3. I think the defense has got a lot to prove. I think they're going to get their asses chewed all friggin' week in practice. I think they're going to have a big chip on their shoulder. So I'm thinking they're going to keep the green machine wave of greenness or whatever out of the end zone. And my pick to click is going to be Noah Fant. I think he hauls in one of those deep passes that were open every time last week. I think Stanley's going to find that touch and drop in at least one big bomb to his blazingly fast tight end. So I got a good feeling about this one.
Awesome. Okay. That's a good one. And so I'm going to go another high scoring, sort of like Bill, but I'm going to have to leave some daylight here. So I'm going to say 45-13. I also think that, like Tori, I think the defense steps up, but I think that North Texas green beans get some points in garbage time just because they're playing against guys who, you know, are normally just learning the playbook at this point. So I think they get a touchdown in garbage time and two field goals to show for the rest of the game. So since you called me a coward for picking Wadley, which I otherwise just would pick him every game this season, and I would be right more than not.
We should take it off.
You can't pick Wadley. Option.
You can't have your Heisman candidate as the pick to click.
It's like it's like I'm the kid when you were little. You're like, hey, everybody, let's play superheroes. It's like, all right, I'm Superman. I can do everything. Yeah. That's
Let me guess. You're the guy that always had to take the Bo Jackson Raiders on the Nintendo.
Tecmo Bowl. I was just going to say that.
That's right. Well, when Tori and I were in college, we played it for money. So you know I was taking Bo Jackson and the Super Tecmo Bowl. Here's what I will say, though. I'm going to be a little more specific. I'm picking James Butler. I think Ooh. That Wadley gets some points, but then they just kind of focus on Butler and Torin Young and Toxic Kimmerbody, and I just feel like the Green Boogers, whatever, cannot handle something like James Butler. So I'm going to be more specific. Instead of saying the Wadley-Butler combo, I'm going to specifically pick James Butler as the pick to click.
He's
big. Actually, I like that pick.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Especially because I think, did North Texas play in the Mountain West?
No, they're Sun Belt. USA.
Yeah, there's
that's still a thing. USA.
Yeah,
there's no mountains and they're not technically in the West. So,
what other teams are in Conference USA, Bill?
Arkansas you State.
Don't ask that. It says that they're the third ranked team in Conference USA West. So, who else? FIU, Florida Atlantic, UAB. Old Dominion, Middle Tennessee. This is just like the Council Bluffs of conferences.
That's a basket of bad.
Hey, Middle
really
Tennessee.
UTSA.
Who did Middle Tennessee? Somebody beat.
Middle Tennessee beat Syracuse.
Yeah. That was it. So, Western Kentucky, the Marshall Thundering Herd. That must be from the Appalachia Division versus the Hurricane Coastal Division. Yeah.
I think it's basically Appalachia versus Texas. It's a bunch of Texas schools like Rice.
Southern Mississippi, the Golden Eagles, those people who are guilty of trademark infringement over the Tiger Hawk. those guys
Brett
are in
Favre?
It.
That was Brett Favre's school.
It was. Okay. We are far afield, gentlemen, but I think we've got some. I think what we're all saying is we expect this one to be in the bag early. We expect to be. It's a 2:30 game, so I think we'll be. Well lubricated by the time the kickoff starts. Bill, are you going to make the trip this time?
I sadly am not. I'm coming for one, but I hate to be one of those millennials, but my couch is crazy comfortable. the bathroom is right there. I wake up in my own bed the next morning when I stay home. I'm having fun watching TV on my big screen.
Well, the couch only gets more comfortable as the season progresses and it gets colder outside, so there's a warning.
True. I'll be up. I'm coming up.
And you get old like Jim and I.
Yeah, that's...
Hey, awesome. Tori, speaking of attendance, you thinking about making that Penn State game, or you got tickets for your boy here?
This is a sore subject, and we'll talk about it more next week.
All right, spoiler.
We'll leave that as a teaser, boys.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Tune in. Find out.
All right, well, with that, we should probably bring this one in for a landing and just say that, you know, we're looking for, we're all just still giddy and in the afterglow of the overtime victory in Ames. We're looking for a nice, easy coast cruise control win over North Texas and then getting ready for the real season to begin, according to Coach Ferentz,
Another 363 days, it's still a Hawkeye State. Still not that Hawkeye it's State. It's always a Hawkeye State, but officially with a W, Hawkeye State.
And what we say, and certainly what we always say in the Hawkeye State when we close this podcast is on Iowa.
Go Hawks!
Beat Nebraska.
Awesome. See you next week, guys.